Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds ideas to the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Vigor, a branding and advertising agency focused on the restaurant and hospitality industry, and by Quench, a food and beverage advertising agency that specializes in evolving iconic food and beverage brands. Learn more, visit vigorbranding.com and quenchagency.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Hi, welcome to Fork Tales. And today on Fork Tales, we're joined by Denise Woodard, founder and CEO of Partake Foods, inspired by her daughter's food allergies. Great story. Denise launched Partake to create allergy-friendly snacks that everyone can enjoy. Denise is also a trailblazer, becoming the first Black woman to raise more than $1 million publicly for a CPG food startup. Denise, thank you so much for joining us. Great seeing you again. Welcome
nice to
Fork Tales.
So excited to be here and for our conversation today.
Thank you very much. Now, I have to ask first and foremost, what's your daughter's name?
My daughter's name is Vivian.
Okay, Vivian. So, you know, they say necessity is the mother of invention, and obviously you're a good mother. So you created this because of your daughter's food allergies. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So I spent my previous life at Coca-Cola working in corporate America. My last role at Coke was in their venturing and emerging brands group. So I was working on high growth, mission oriented beverage brands and had no intention of ever leaving. And Vivian is, she just turned 10, but right around her first birthday, through a series of unfortunate, kind of scary events, but knock on wood, she's been good ever since. We learned that she had several food allergies to tree nuts, eggs, and corn. So simple foods that I was eating every single day. I'd never had food allergies or intolerances, so it was a whole new world for me. But once we saw kind of the fact that food allergies really can be a life or death matter for people, it brought home how they were going to become a part of our everyday life. And I sought out products that she could eat and enjoy safely and that we could eat as a family together, and couldn't find the things that I was looking for and decided to do something about it.
That's awesome. So now obviously she's part owner of this then, because you kind of owe her, right?
She reminds me all the time. So yes.
That's awesome. We'll do another segment of families and business together. That'll be the next segment. So when did you know that, you know, you had to turn this personal challenge into a business?
So right around Vivian's first birthday, we learned she had allergies in the spring of 2016. In June of 2016, our nanny, Martha, really kind of sat me down and said she was tired of hearing me complain about all the things that I couldn't find for my daughter. And she's like, you go to work every day and help these other people build their companies. Why don't you do something? And it was the kick in the butt alongside this story's kind of like something out of a movie. That following weekend, we were at the zoo. I was telling my husband, Jeremy, like, you won't believe Martha has this crazy idea. She thinks I should do this thing. And the person who was in line in front of us turned around and said, you should enter this pitch competition called the Start Something Challenge. And I thought about it and I went home and I incorporated a business and what I called it initially, because I knew it wouldn't be the name forever, but it was really what I was setting out to do. It was called Vivi's Life LLC because I wanted to make Vivi's life easier and better.
Awesome.
I entered the pitch competition. It came with a $10,000 prize, which was helpful. But the thing that was most valuable was it came with local press, which forced me to tell my employer what I was working on, because the last thing I needed was them to see me in the local newspaper, like, woman starts allergy-friendly food company. And so Martha has equity in the business. And it was that was she started the kick in the butt that got me to leave my corporate career to build this company.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't realize that. That's a great story. I've known you for a while. I did not know that part of the story. That's fantastic. So, I mean, launching a food startup, it's cool because I see this a lot when interview different people and certainly know different people that own companies. You know, you worked in Coca-Cola. So there's a company that has deep pockets, R&D, trends. They understand it all. What a difference when you're going to do a startup. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, you know, what were some of the challenges in launching a food startup?
Sure. So I did not realize the amount of resources that I had access to in my corporate job. And I thought it gave me kind of honestly a sense of false confidence. I knew enough to be dangerous. I could speak the lingo. I knew the acronyms. I did not realize what I was in for. I think some of the challenges I would simplify to where to make the product, how to make the product, And honestly, also just like how to run the business day to day. So how to make the product. Martha, our nanny, and I went into the kitchen and failed horribly. And then I realized that there were professionals, food scientists, who actually bring products to life. So I had to figure that out and find a person to be able to help bring my vision and mission to life. And unlike my days at Coca-Cola, where we work with like massive flavor houses and agencies, like I was cold emailing people on LinkedIn looking for an individual. And thankfully found her, and she helped bring my vision to life. The where to make it. The word contract, like term contract manufacturer, wasn't even in my vocabulary. And so I've had to find a contract manufacturer. I think one competitive moat, but thing that keeps me up, is there's not very many allergy friendly contract manufacturers. So calling someone up and getting them to agree to work with a woman with an idea was definitely a challenge.
Sure.
And then, just learning every part of the business, like getting a QuickBooks account and understanding like how the financials would work, understanding how to buy inventory and schedule freight, and like doing all the jobs. I was the only employee at Partake from the day we incorporated all the way through until January of 2020. So almost 4 years.
That's crazy. You know, it's interesting. Like I'm very fortunate. I was a founder entrepreneur. I started personally with $300, and I had no money, no backing, no nothing. I had an idea. I went for it, and it sounds like a great story. And you know, it's a good story, but I didn't have anything to lose. I mean, I didn't have a family at the time. I just had an apartment, a rundown car. I mean, like, it's like, yeah, this is all I know. So I was good to take and leave a good job, a corporate job, if you will, and, you know, roll the dice. I give you a lot of credit. That's not an easy thing to do. Not an easy thing to do.
I appreciate it. I get the question oftentimes if my husband works in the business. And I think that like being an entrepreneur is a family sport, even if he technically works in the business or not. And so I would say I would give him a lot of credit. And honestly, like my daughter too, I think about all the sacrifice that she made. Like she can probably put together a trade show booth faster than most adults. Cause like rather than play dates on the weekend, she had to go with me to different events. And so it really does become a family affair.
You know, that's great. And thing too is I'm sure that's going to serve her very well in the future. She's going to have this like confidence and this knowledge and this ability, like of just, hey, I can do anything kind of attitude, which is just priceless, you know? And so you not only started a food business, but you started an allergy friendly, food business. How is that different? That's another, I'm sure, moat or obstacle that you have to cross.
I think a combination of the both. And so I needed a top 9 allergen-free manufacturing facility because I thought like we could never uphold the brand promise of like being a sigh of relief for people with food allergies if we're making the products in a facility with peanuts and tree nuts. Mm-hmm. And so not very many facilities. I called one up that I wanted to work with that I knew could scale with my business, and they nicely hung up the phone on me. And so I ended up having to run a Kickstarter campaign as I told you, other people besides me think this could be an idea that could work. And so we finished in the top 1% of food campaigns on the platform, but that was definitely a big risk that we took. So that was a challenge. And then also from a cross-contamination perspective, like there's so much vetting that goes into our raw material suppliers. There's so much additional cost that goes into the testing of our raw materials. And we also want to provide an accessible price point on shelf. And so being a small business without a ton of buying power, trying to meet the consumer's need at shelf at a reasonable price with additional costs in the supply chain, you know, definitely requires lots of turning of the dials to try to make it work.
It's amazing. So was there ever a moment in the company when you thought, you know, this wasn't going to happen? Like you weren't going to be able to take to the next level because you had all these, I mean, you had a lot of things against you here. I mean, let's face it, your startup. I mean, you know, it's like, this would be a tough endeavor for Coke to take on, like, or I'll say any big food manufacturing company to say, we're going to get into the space and really own this space. So were there times when you were, you know, when you questioned it?
I don't think we have enough time to talk about all the time.
It's be a therapy session.
Seriously. You know, more times than I can count, honestly. Times when I thought, like, how will we get this funding? How are we going to make payroll? Times when I thought, like, how will we ever be able to produce this much? Times when I thought, like, how will we ever compete with these massive brands at the shelf? Like, COVID happening, supply chain challenges happening. It feels like a game of whack-a-mole. It's like you think you got one thing covered and then, oh, tariffs, or it's something every week there's a new adventure. And for me, I think the thing that keeps me going really is my daughter. Like I think knowing that I'm doing this for a reason much bigger than, oh, I want to get rich or be an entrepreneur, like having her as my North Star. And then kind of as I've been on this journey and have been fortunate enough to be a mentor to other women founders and to other minority founders, like seeing that I get this like privilege, honestly, to be able to help pave the way for other companies, like I don't take that lightly. And I think it's important that I do everything in my power to try to make this business successful, not just for myself, but for my family and for other entrepreneurs that will hopefully do what I'm doing, but go further and go faster.
Yeah, it's, I mean, again, it's amazing what you've done. And it is, you know, your reputation preceded you. I knew of you before I got to meet you. And so I think that's very exciting. So how has the product line grown and since the beginning? And how much more growth would you like to see? Where do you see the product going?
My team is probably very sick of this like rocket ship depiction I've been showing, but I really feel like the past few years we've just been building the foundation, making sure that we have a sturdy supply chain, making sure that our unit economics and base business is strong. And I feel like we're at the moment now where we get to tinker and build the rocket. And for us, that looks like innovation outside of the cookie category. It looks like additional distribution. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, we're on the cusp, hopefully, of a significant amount of growth that will come through increased distribution. We're in about 18,000 stores across the country right now, but I think there's quite a bit of room to grow there, as well as, you know, the name Partake, I think, can translate to almost any part of the grocery store. And that's, you know, I think there's a fine line between going too far too fast. Sure. And so I think focus is important, but honestly, we've been focusing on cookies for the last 9 years and making sure that that part of the business is really strong. And I think it's time for us to start to venture into other categories, which I'm super excited about.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, I mean, you know, at Quench, that's what we have, the agency marketing from Quench. We focus on trends. So, in the business and in any food business, trends are a huge part. And, you know, obviously with the allergies and with everything that people are dealing with in that regard, I mean, you're on trend, but how do you look for trends, or how do you look at trends, and what are you watching right now?
I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't mention protein, because I think as a consumer, like I'm trying to, like, I never thought I would be a person who was counting, and I am. And so I think I'm a laggard. So I know if I'm doing it, then other people definitely are. So I think the challenging thing for us is like, I didn't build this business to be trendy. And so I want to make sure we're listening to what consumers want and we're providing them solutions. But also, like, if we picked up every single trend that we saw, like, we'd have ashwagandha, protein-filled, fiber-filled, GLP-1 sensitive cookies. And so, like, what are the trends that make sense for us from a brand equity perspective? And what are the ones that maybe we leave to our competitors? Mm-hmm.
That's great. And you're obviously on the trends because you just nailed three of them right there in that answer. So you're
obviously following along. I spend a lot of time on grocery stores.
That's funny. Well, I saw on your website, I saw you had the minis. I thought that was kind of cool. Hot. And then you did a promo with Marvel, I believe, right? With that. How did that work? Talk about that a little bit. Was that your first venture into doing like a co-promotion and you had a smaller product? So how is that working out?
Sure. So the Marvel experience has been fabulous. It's our second licensed product. We did a cookie mix as a limited time offer with Sesame Street and the Cookie Monster years ago. And I think for us, that was a nice way to dip our toe in. And it allowed us to see, one, it gave me a lot of pride in the brand equity that we built to see properties like Sesame Street and Marvel want to partner with my business. And two, it allowed me to see how partnering with a group that has, you know, decades of brand equity and a loyal consumer following could help make our products more accessible and interesting to other consumers. So I think it was a plus from a business perspective as it opened us up to more consumers. And for us, we're starting to see, I don't know if this is a trend or what you would call it, but for us, we're seeing this movement in our product from just adults wanting it to actually parents needing a school safe solution, even if their children don't have allergies, which has made us lean much more heavily into like little mini cookies and lunchbox packs. Sure. And you'll see that a lot of the innovation that we have continues to kind of follow down that vein of providing safe and delicious products for parents.
That's great. Well, so, I mean, your products are delicious. And I know, like, again, from our business in the marketing side of things with the agency, that, you know, especially you have this, you know, allergy free. So that's a selling point. That's huge. That's a big deal, but they're really good too. So how do you balance the talk about taste versus talk about, hey, we're allergy free? I mean, because, I mean, you could lead really just because they taste good.
And so that is the, I saw this as an example play out in real life where I would drag my husband to do demos with me. And I was so proud of all the attributes of the business. And I would say, we have these cookies that are top 9 allergen free and non-GMO and kosher and vegan and gluten free. And people would look at me and be like, well, they probably don't taste very good.
Right.
My husband, on the other hand, would lead with, I have these delicious cookies. Do you want to try them? And eventually I took a clue from him, because he would outsell me 1,000 times over at every demo. And I think you've seen that in our packaging evolution. Like, our first packaging, like, called out all the things that weren't in the product. And then consumers at shelf who have a few seconds to make a decision, we're like, well, I'm not looking for this. And the consumers who have allergies, who are looking, they're going to turn the box over every single time. And so you've seen our product, our packaging has definitely evolved over time. Mm-hmm. And to give a sneak peek, we have a new brand refresh that'll go into market this summer. And it kind of takes that even further, where we're hearing from consumers, like, when we eat a cookie, we want a cookie. And calling out all of the other attributes doesn't necessarily do the brand any favors.
Yeah. And it's tough because you have so many of these reasons to believe, right? All these great facts, and you want to lead with them because they're so important for everybody. But at the end of the day, people want a good cookie, right? And plus then checking all those boxes, just the added bonus. And I think that's fantastic. We ran at it with Vigor in the restaurants. We've run into that with, like, different, like, vegan restaurants and things like that. They'll be like, wait a second, our food's just good. We don't have to tell people, because almost to your point, people are like, well, it must not be good then. It must not taste good. And we can hit a bigger audience. So that's great. That's really cool. So you've landed some great retail partnerships. So stores like Target, Whole Foods, Kroger, Trader Joe's. What's been a key to building and maintaining those kinds of relationships? I mean, you get in there. I mean, what's the key to maintaining that?
Sure. So I think a lot of this really is, like, people to people. So much of it is just, like, personal relationships, showing up and doing what you say you're going to do, being a good partner, listening to what the retailer needs, and not just making it about you and your business. And so I think there's that, like, interpersonal communication aspect of it. Then I used to hear this saying so much, and I'd kind of roll my eyes, but it's so true. Like, the hard work isn't getting on the store shelves, it's staying on the store shelves and getting your product off the shelves. And so for us, that really means investing in the partnerships, whether that be through price promotion, whether that be through shopper marketing, whether it be through supporting the retailer's efforts. But I think that was a learning lesson for me. That was an expensive one, honestly. Like, it was so nice to be able to get all that distribution, but to be able to really invest in each partnership was expensive. And so I think we probably went a little too fast in terms of taking on new doors, because it was important for me that we were able to maintain our shelf presence and continue to expand with those retailers, which requires support.
That's, you nailed it. And it's true. Like, we all get excited. Everyone gets excited on that first PO. And it feels like, it's almost like, oh, I've made it. But that's really not it, is it? You made it to the shelf. And if it doesn't go off the shelf, you didn't make it anywhere. And
right
back out. And it's, I empathize with anyone that deals with that, because it's tough. I mean, it's a roller coaster of emotions with that whole thing. Fighting food insecurity. I mean, Partake is involved in so many great, I'll say, things or missions or initiatives beyond just food. So fighting food insecurity is an important issue for you. Why is food insecurity, particularly for families dealing with allergies, such an important topic?
I remember meeting a woman who worked for an organization called the Food Equality Initiative, and her family was experiencing the double whammy of having children with food allergies and experiencing food insecurity. And she talked about going to her local food bank and potatoes and tomatoes being the only thing that her kids could eat safely. And that was heartbreaking to me. And so being able to, I think as emerging natural food brands, oftentimes we're at a premium price point to some of the more conventional products that are on shelf. And so it's really important to me to be able to provide accessible products. And some of that comes through donating products through organizations like No Kid Hungry, like the Birthday Party Project. And so to date, we've donated over 1 million boxes of cookies, but it's all about, like, the name Partake, and not to get long-winded, but the name Partake originally came from this idea that I wanted my daughter and people with food allergies to be able to partake. Right. But then as I continued to see groups of people that weren't able to partake, I felt like it was our mission to create a vehicle for inclusivity that would allow more people to have access to better things.
That's great. In fact, you just stole my next question. I was going to ask you about the name. And it's an obvious answer, and it's a great answer, because you know, you feel bad. If, you know, I always think about like these little kids in school or whatever, and they're like, well, I can't eat that. And they feel left out. And God forbid someone's, you know, points out that they, you know, have an allergy. That's terrible. So it's like, you're just being very inclusive, bringing everyone together. And then you bring up the No Kid Hungry. I mean, how did that partnership come together? I mean, obviously it fits right into allowing everyone to partake, but did you find them? Did they find you, or how did that all work?
We found them. I'm a very big believer in shooting your shot. And I was just so impressed by the work their organization was doing. And I reached out to them, and thankfully they were open to partnering with us. And so we've been so fortunate over the past few years to be able to partner with them, to partner with the Food Equality Initiative and the Birthday Party Project and so many nonprofits that are doing the good work of helping more people get access to good food.
That's great. And there's a growing awareness around how food allergies impact different communities in different ways. What have you learned? And what can you tell us about food allergies and, you know, racial disparities?
Sure. So it's been interesting to learn as I've gone down this rabbit hole, but food allergies disproportionately affect Black and Latino children to the tune of about 7 to 10% more likely to have food allergies or eczema or food allergies. There's a trifecta of things that go together: food allergies, asthma, and eczema. And so I think there's still a lot of research to be done as to determine why that is in terms of racial disparity and also around food allergies in general. And there's, you know, a few theories floating around the quality of food that we're eating from a GMO and antibiotic standpoint. Is our society actually too clean and too sterile perspective? And so like a lot of different theories. And I guess if there's any benefit to the increase in food allergies is hopefully that's bringing more increased awareness and more dollars for research so that we can actually get some answers.
That's great. So what advice would you have for other food and beverage companies who might want to do more when it comes to food insecurity?
You know, I think you don't have to overcomplicate things. That can look like, for us in the earliest days, that looked like there were like local community fridges in our neighborhood in New York. And I would take extra product to those local fridges. Like, it doesn't have to be a national partnership. If you have excess product that you need to figure out what to do with, like reaching out to your local food bank. If you want to get your consumers involved, building out some sort of campaign where, like, I think it's been really heartening for me to see how many of our consumers care about these causes and want to be able to support with their own dollars as well. And so I would say, like, you don't have to overcomplicate, and it's okay to start small, and that mission and that growth of impact can evolve and increase over time.
That's great. So you've broken lots of ground. I mean, as a founder, a leader in the food industry, first Black woman to raise more than $1 million publicly for a CPG food startup. What does that mean to you? And how do you see the industry as far as diversity and inclusion?
You know, I think I'm definitely proud of the statistics that you shared, but I also am honestly a bit disappointed by them. Like, we're in 2025, right? And like, we're talking about the first person to raise $1 million in an industry where billions of dollars have been raised. And so, you know, to go back to my earlier point, I just feel like I have this like responsibility and honestly like a privilege to be able to help other people, to help our retail partners, to help our customers, to expand their efforts from a DEI perspective and to grow from a diversity and inclusion perspective. I think that, you know, there's definitely been progress that's been made. I look at brands that I admire and founders that I admire, but I also recognize that there's still a long way to go, and not just in ethnic diversity and geographic diversity and background, like in career prior to starting your food business from a background perspective. Like, I just think that the best things come from diversity of thought and diversity of background. And while we've made a lot of progress, I think there's still a long way to go.
Yeah. What advice would you give to other women or founders trying to break through the barriers?
You know, I think the same advice that I would probably give to any other founders, which would be, you know, understanding like the reason you're doing this. Like, to your point, like, it is a all-consuming, up and down roller coaster kind of journey. And, you know, if you have a problem that's keeping you up at night that you want to solve for a reason that's bigger than yourself, then like, I say, go for it. And it's okay to start small. And it's important to ask for help. I think, you know, that's a muscle that I've had to learn how to strengthen over time. And it's been so inspiring to see how warm and inclusive this industry is. I feel like there's been so many things that I felt like were existential crises, and I would call someone and
none of this is like rocket science. Like most of the challenges that we're facing are things that other companies and other people have been through. And so being able to ask for help, being willing to start small and be humble in how you go about building your business, but knowing that it's a challenging road even for the best of us.
That's, I mean, it's no wonder you're successful. Just you have the right attitude all the way around on all this. It's fantastic. And so this is going to sound like a dumb thing. I agree with you on the statistics. I mean, it's a shame we're still talking about things like that or have to talk about that. Do you even think about how to build an inclusive company? Like, is it just, I mean, to me, again, that should be natural. It shouldn't be something you have to try to do. But do you feel like maybe a responsibility there? Or do you feel like you have to, I don't know, really be, forceful in doing that?
You know, I think it's just kind of a natural part of how I like to operate. And at the same time, I think it's important to allow and to kind of encourage my employees to show up as themselves. And so that inclusivity can look like things like, I started my day late today because there was meetings at my daughter's school. And I want my employees to feel like they have the freedom to be able to do the same thing. Because I think this whole idea of like separating your like personal life and work life isn't healthy for anyone. And so allowing our employees to show up as their full self. I think about our hiring practices. We're hiring for some key roles and ensuring that we have a really diverse slate of employees, of potential candidates, whether from a geographic location, whether from an ethnic backgrounds perspective, et cetera, like making sure that we get a wide range of people who fit the experience required for the roles when we're looking at hiring. When we are bringing investors on board, making sure that we're working with investors who align with us from a mission and values perspective. And so I try to think about it in a part of like all the decisions that I'm making as in regards to the business.
Excellent. Are there other brands or entrepreneurs you admire, when it comes to inclusion in the food and beverage industry?
Sure. There's definitely like brands that have been around for a while, like Ben and Jerry's. I am always so impressed by how much they speak their mind and stand on what they believe in. To emerging brands like Siete, was so happy to see them and their recent exit. And I feel like it just showed like a company could stay true to their values and still have a successful financial outcome. So I'm really big fan of them. Think of like more emerging smaller businesses. There's a brand called A Dozen Cousins that started by an ex-General Mills executive. The brand is named A Dozen Cousins because his daughter is one of a dozen cousins.
That's awesome.
And it pays homage to his African-American and Latino background and like bringing better for you foods to a diverse consumer or in introducing those foods to any consumer, honestly. And so, yeah, there's so many brands that I admire.
That's awesome. What's on the horizon? What's next for Partake in terms of new products, markets? I mean, you're right. You have a great name. You could really be, I'll say, inclusive and bringing everyone together in all kinds of food categories.
That's our hope. So we're starting to really narrow in on what those next categories will be. I kind of bucket it into more products, more distribution, more impact. I am excited to be able to innovate beyond cookies. Excited to continue to meet our consumers where they live and work and play. And then also, like, because of because of the way our business is structured, I think the more growth that we see, the more positive impact that we'll hopefully continue to be able to have.
It's excellent. So building a brand takes a ton of passion and persistence, especially when the company grows and evolves. Almost 10 years now in, how do you personally stay inspired and energized as a founder?
You know, I make it a deliberate point. I've just started this practice in the past year because it really started to hit home for me that I have been doing this for a while and I see so many friends get burnt out and I don't want that to happen because I really do love what I do. So one, being really deliberate about making time to think and be inspired, whether that looks like setting out time to journal or to go on walks or to visit grocery stores or to visit like small markets, like looking at inspiration in simple places, but making sure that I give myself the time to find the inspiration, making sure that when I started the business, I didn't put an out of office or take a real vacation until this past summer. And but that's not good for anybody. And so like, I think, it's hard to determine or decipher like, it's really, starting a business is hard and it's all consuming. And so like, I'm not going to say like, oh, you should take all these like vacations and do all this thing when you're starting. Cause like, it's important to like put your head down and do the work. It's realistically, I don't think you can't, but also I think to stay inspired and to stay well rested, to be able to have the longevity to like run the marathon that is the business, it's important to be able to take breaks.
Yeah. Well, and you, it reminded me of you have your daughter to look at, and she was the inspiration and who's literally sees you every day and you see her. So that's amazing. Like, I know when, personally, like when I had, I'd moved homes and I have two daughters and, we have this wall in our house that you can only see from upstairs as you walk down. Right. And I covered that in these, actually it was in the black and white photos I was just talking to you about, because I said you look like this Dan Birch photograph. I had all these Dan Birch photographs of my daughters and our family in black and white, and they're all over this one wall. And I did that because I realized like, that's why I work. Every day I go to work because my three girls, my wife, my two daughters, and you know, and there's a couple of bulldog pictures mixed in there, and they're girls too. But I do that just because, I mean, this is why I work, because I want them to have great lives and be confident, successful women. And yeah, so it's you need that motivation, because you know, again, we love what we do, but let's face it, there's some tough days and it's a grind, and sometimes you question like, what am I doing? So you know, I really empathize with that, and I understand the journey. So I have to say too, one of the things I find really remarkable is you know, as an agency, you know, with Quench, we have to build stories. We have CPG brands, and we have to create this story, this romance, and all that behind brands. You have so much built in or baked in. I'll use that for, how's that for a term? Baked into your brand. It's not even funny. I mean, the name, the story of your daughter, the allergies, where that comes from. And then just, you know, the inclusiveness all the way around and want to include people. I mean, you have such a fantastic platform to build. I mean, you really have great things ahead of you. And I think it's awesome.
I appreciate that. It's interesting because I feel like it can be backwards sometimes, because I've met friends who like, you know, made a product for so long and sold it at the farmer's market and the product was incredible. I feel like we started with a story, and that tinkering that we've been doing is to make sure that we had a product that we felt really good about. And so like, you know, I think all of the pieces are really important, because you're nothing if you have a story with no good product. And honestly, the same if you have a good product, but nothing to talk about that is going to get people remembering who you are and why you're doing what you're doing. And so it feels like it's such a hard balance to get the perfect recipe, literally and figuratively.
Well, you nailed it. And it's true, but you had the story, but you obviously have taken a lot of effort and made the product on point. So that's huge, because at the end of the day, people will need a good cookie, right?
That's
so
true.
All the other boxes you can check are all bonuses, and some of them are necessities as far as if you have allergies. But I mean, I think it's really important to taste good. So, all right, I have one last question, and you can't have a cookie. This is not, you can't answer by having a cookie, but if you had one last meal, one final meal, what would you eat and why?
I'm going to kind of cheat on the question, because normally I wouldn't eat these two things together in one meal, but since I can only say one, I'll just name them together. And I grew up in a small town in North Carolina. My mom's Korean and my dad's Black. And my two favorite foods from kind of each of their heritages are kimchi and fried chicken.
That's awesome.
I would eat that, and I probably wouldn't eat it together. I would split it between two meals, but it makes me think of my parents, and it makes me think of home and love. And I think, you know, why I built what I built is because I think food is something that's supposed to evoke positive memories for everyone. And even if you have food allergies, like, you should be able to have that same joy.
That's a great answer. In fact, ironically, I just had Judy Ju on our podcast, and she has a restaurant. She's a celebrity chef. She's a restaurant called Soul Food. And it's Korean fried chicken. Kimchi is a part of it. So you might be able to just go there and get it. It's all together.
I have to go there.
I think that's her specialty, to be honest with you. So you thought it was like two different things, you know?
How serendipitous. I must find her and go to her restaurant.
Yep. I'm trying to think. I don't know if she has anything. I should know this. If she's anything on the West Coast, I think she's in New York.
I will travel for this. I will go anywhere for this.
Yeah. Yeah. This is like, it's a funny you said that. At least you didn't say McRib what was it? The Shamrock Shake. I did have that. Oh. Someone had said that. So, and I'm not going to pick on anybody, although I just did, but I thought that was pretty funny. It was very unique, a very colorful dish, but that's awesome. So Denise, once again, thank you so much. You were fantastic. Your story is wonderful. I know it's going to end really well and going to keep growing. So thank you for spending time with us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome.